Welcome to the big interview on today's show, and I'm very pleased to be joined right now by John Sarson. He is managing partner of the Sarson Funds. Sarson, just like it sounds, S-A-R-S-O-N, and now that you know how to spell it, well, they're on Twitter at Sarson Funds, and they're online at sarsonfunds.com. The Sarson Funds themselves, well, they're not traditional mutual funds or ETFs. They are cryptocurrency investments that basically are sold as limited partnerships. So you have to be an accredited investor. It's like buying into a hedge fund with a couple of different exceptions. One of them giving a little bit more liquidity than you might have, which is important when you start to talk about cryptocurrencies. They've got both a large coin fund, which would basically be the most popular cryptocurrencies, and then they've got a small coin fund. And we'll talk about all of that and more. John Sarson, welcome to Money Life.
Chuck, thank you so much for having me. It's good to be here.
We are living in really, really interesting times when it comes to cryptocurrencies. And it's not just because the last couple of days or weeks have seen Bitcoin pop up again and get past 9,000. It is because, well, they're the talk of a lot of things because Facebook is coming up with its own variation of a cryptocurrency, or trying to, called Libra. And there's a lot of discussion about what could happen there. There are still hundreds of coins out there, although my audience is probably going to be familiar with one, two, maybe three of them. So how much is this evolution going to be something that in 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, everybody's using crypto, and if you're not, you're out of the party? And how much of this is, no, it's still the Wild West and speculation?
Well, you know, that's the $64,000 question. The reason why cryptocurrencies are becoming so popular is because the internet is becoming so popular. And the internet and cryptocurrencies go together like peanut butter and jelly. With the internet, we basically saw the emancipation of data. And now data can flow around the world at no cost and in real time. So we can video chat with someone in Africa on our phones, and it costs nothing and the quality is good. But before the invention of cryptocurrencies, we couldn't send that same person 5 cents. So cryptocurrencies allow for value, units of value, to be shared around the world between computers the same way that data is currently shared seamlessly around the world.
So what we've got here is the internet of money. But what we also have here is a variation on something, as much as everybody wants to make it new, we have a variation on something that's not new at all. Functionally, when you start to see Facebook saying, we're going to come out with a coin, or you could say Amazon coming out with a coin, what you've got at that point is what amounts to a company script. Go back to the old days where you had company towns, right? The old mining town that you see in the movies. You load 15 tons and what do you get? You know, another day older.
Another day older.
I owe my soul to the company store. That's because you were getting paid in script. I have a collection of coins that, well, if you were in the right town, in the right place at the right time, they were worth something. But today, they are worth nothing. So how do we know that crypto at some point, or that whatever the next new crypto at some point, will not kind of turn into company script, but if the company goes out of business or has a problem or whatever, there goes your money?
Chuck, you know, there's a lot more similarities between a company script and a fiat currency, or a traditional government decreed currency, than there is between a company script and a cryptocurrency. The major difference lies in the ability of the company or the government to create more of the currency at will or by decree. And this is the problem that we've seen in a place like Venezuela this year, where Venezuela has seen their government print more currency and people's savings have become essentially worthless as the governments devalue their currency. Decentralized cryptocurrencies remove this capability from the company store or from the government by having the supply of their cryptocurrencies controlled basically by the algorithm or the code that is the software that underlines the cryptocurrency.
So as you are watching the evolution of something like Libra, the Facebook coin, how interesting and how different is it to you that they're trying to line up central banks? Because that's distinctly part of their strategy. For those who have not heard about Libra, the Facebook coin, one of the things that they're apparently doing is trying to work with central banks, which at some point could leave central banks backing these currencies, which would be, I suppose, good if you hold them, bad if maybe your government central bank gets stuck with something down the line and et cetera. So you know, crypto's always been, yeah, we don't deal with central bankers. Is that the next evolution?
Well, you know, Facebook would like us to believe that that is the next evolution. And Facebook has suggested that they're going to house their consortium behind their Libra coin in Switzerland. And they're basically, it appears that they are making not a new type of currency, just a new currency that's very similar to old currencies. But then rather than just have one government central bank being behind its stability and its value, it'll be a consortium of several central banks, and it'll be housed in a politically neutral country like Switzerland. Now we looked at that deeply at our firm, and we kind of were a little bit underwhelmed because it seems like meet the new boss, same as the old boss, where you still have the ability for governments to debase currencies and to ban people or bar people from participating in their banking system, like we have with the current system of Western banking in the world right now.
Well, anytime we wind up quoting The Who and in an interview here on Money Life, I'm always happy. Let's talk a little bit about the variations in coins and help my audience understand what's going on. Because, like I said, most folks understand that you've got Bitcoin and then a couple of others, Ethereum and several others, that are the big coins. But you guys have that difference between your large coin fund and your small coin fund. How different is the performance? I mean, is this the same thing as like I'm going with established gold miners or I'm going with junior gold miners, or is it much more different than that?
It's not entirely different than that. You know, there's a few distinctions that I'd like to make. You know, there's a real desire to want to take a cryptocurrency like Bitcoin and compare it against a stock or a basket of stocks, or compare it against a commodity. And especially this conversation comes up when someone looks at the price of Bitcoin and it's gone from 100 to 9,000 in the last 10 years. And they say, well, this can't go up anymore because, you know, trees don't grow to the sky. And that's like a Wall Street axiom, but that doesn't necessarily apply to Bitcoin because Bitcoin's not a stock. Bitcoin's a belief system, just like our current monetary system in the United States is a belief system. You know, the paper that our dollars are printed on has almost no value. But we believe that U.S. dollars are easily transferred into a good or a service, and that belief system doesn't have to be limited in the same way that, like, a basket of gold mining companies can really be limited only by how much gold they can realistically dig out of the ground and at what value that gold is. Now, an important distinction I'd like to make about Bitcoin versus other centralized attempts at digital currencies is that proponents of Bitcoin will sort of chuckle when they hear about the fact that the government may shut down Bitcoin or would like to shut down Bitcoin, because there is no Bitcoin building. There is no Bitcoin server. Bitcoin is stored and warehoused. The database that is the public record of the Bitcoin transactions is stored on the computers of every person that is mining Bitcoin cryptocurrency. So it's completely decentralized. And for that reason, it's essentially unstoppable without shutting down the internet itself. So there is very little the government can do to step in the way of Bitcoin continued growth as long as the network continues to grow and people continue to believe that they can easily turn a Bitcoin into a good or a service. The belief system continues to spread.
And from the perspective, and we're almost out of time here, from the perspective of an investor looking at it now, there are plenty of people who will still say, I don't want to go to Bitcoin. It's still the Wild West. And there are plenty of people who remember things like the collapse of Mt. Gox, which at one point was the largest Bitcoin exchange, which basically just evaporated and took money, et cetera. Do you believe that those horror stories are over? That's not to say that Bitcoin's not going to have wild swings in valuation and people could lose fortunes or make vast fortunes, but that the horror, fraudulent kinds of stories, that they are out of the picture now on the established and well-established coins?
In some ways, they are being minimized. And that's one of our major value adds that we offer to our clients, is that we try to make investing in cryptocurrencies safer and easier. So when you're investing through a limited partnership like what we have a policy against hacking insurance that's underwritten by Lloyd's of London. And hacking is a great way to lose your cryptocurrencies. If someone gets your password, they get your cryptocurrencies. There's no cryptocurrency police that's going to go and get them. and there is no way to really undo that transaction like we have with the current banking system. So consumers should be very wary, and it is very much a caveat emptor environment. And the largest cryptocurrencies, they are the safest because they are traded on the most secure exchanges in the United States. But they also maybe don't hold the same return potential as some of the smaller cryptocurrencies, to get back to your earlier question about some of these smaller tokens. So Bitcoin, with a total market cap of $165 billion, do I think that Bitcoin continues to rally and take out its old all-time high of 20,000? I 100% think that. You know, this is the four times in Bitcoin's short 10-year life, it's fallen by more than 80%. The last three times it recovered and made a new all-time high. This time it seems to be on its way to doing that. It still has to rally approximately another 100% to get back to its all-time high of December of 2017. But this time it has something different going for it that it didn't have before. This time it has the backing of some major Wall Street firms, Fidelity, Morgan Creek, JP Morgan, and now even Facebook, launching its own cryptocurrency, bringing awareness to the space. So Bitcoin may go back to its all-time high. We believe that it will. But some of these smaller coins that are trading at a penny or two pennies, not unlike a small cap stock, have the potential to maybe return even more dramatic returns for an investor. And that's why we have our small cap portfolio for those investors looking to take more risk on cryptocurrencies that may or may not be here in 5 years, but may have the potential to do 10x, whereas Bitcoin may be slowing down in its growth cycle.
John, great stuff. It's the Sarsen Funds, sarsenfunds.com. Money Life will be right back.
Thank you, Chuck.